Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you very much to Greg for that news update. There'll be more news with Mr. Host at 7 o'clock right now on this day, the 12th of December. Back in 1911, Delhi would replace Calcutta as the capital city of India. In 1932, on this day, the USSR and China would resume diplomatic relations. Interesting how that turned out today. In 1946, on this day, J.D. Rockefeller would gift the United Nations, yes, I said gift the United Nations, six blocks of real estate in Manhattan. That is where the United Nations headquarters are at this moment in time. What a weird gift. 1963, on this day, Kenya would gain independence. In 1964, they would be officially recognized as a republic, with the first president in Jomo Kenyatta being elected as president a year later in 1964. 1980, on this particular day in history, Apple would have its IPO on this day. That would be one of, obviously, the most successful IPOs that we would know to date. Interestingly enough, 38 years after the IPO, it would be the first US company to be valued at over $1 trillion, and it would be the first to be valued over $2 trillion 2 years after that, and 3 years after that would be the first to hit over $3 trillion. In 1982, on this day, there was $9.8 million US dollars stolen from a money transport vehicle in New York City. It's a cash in transit heist. They've been doing them in New York long before we've been doing them in South Africa. In 2000, on this day, Al Gore would lose the presidency of the United States by a single vote, as the Supreme Court would vote 5-4 that the president would be President Bush as opposed to President Al Gore. That's a tough one to lose. You're tuned into the SAFM Market Update with MoneyWeb. I'm your host, Jimmy Moyaha. And on the show today, we're going to be taking a look at some mergers and acquisitions activity. There has been a bid by the Zuhid Group for Barloworld at about 120 Rand a share. There's also been a disposal by Bidvest of about 2.8 billion rands for their banking business to Access Bank. We're going to take a look at that. We're going to take a look at some other stories in the development space and see what it all looks like. We're going to speak to Deal Leaders International around that. Then we're also going to wrap up the financial sector for the year. We're going to speak to the director at Denker Capital, Corky Koeman, around that and get a sense of how the financial sector stocks have been performing throughout the year. Then we've got a conversation with Standard Bank around the latest sponsor of the year that they were awarded at the 2024 Sports Industry Awards. We're going to speak to the executive head of branding and marketing at Standard Bank around that. And then we're going to take a look at an SME, because it's Thursday and that's what we do on a Thursday. We're going to speak to the founder and CEO, or co-founder and CEO rather, of Matric Live, the app that won App of the Year recently.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
As always, we kick off the show with how the markets have been moving throughout the day. I'm joined on the line by the wealth manager at PSG Old Oak, Skulk Lowe, to take a look at the market movements and see if we can make sense of them. Good evening, Skulk. I can say it's lovely to speak to you today. It is a little better. It's not 1780 or 1769, but it's 1776, and we'll take the win. How are you, Skulk?
Well, it's the most wonderful time of the year.
It certainly is.
So, and there's not a lot happening, and we got about 6 minutes to talk about it. So this is it's a wonderful, wonderful time of the year. I mean, I had a look at the market this morning, and I was quite surprised. We're looking at a JSE that's up year to date let's call it 17.5%. It's just rounded up, like every wealth manager does. It's just been a phenomenal year, and you're going to talk about Barloworld. A little bit sad to see Barloworld, you know, delist from the JSE. It's one of the big companies, and we've seen some murmurs, some big acquisition, possible acquisitions. We had that attack, you know, from BHP Billiton on Anglo American. Still wondering if that's gonna happen again. Are we gonna see a second same with the first in 2025? But I mean, as we sit here, I think the biggest, let's call it worry still, to me, is inflation. Do we have inflation under control? And you know, I think what we've seen today from a South African PPI point of view, second month in a row, we've got deflation from a PPI point of view. So that's not necessarily good, but what we lost on the swings, the US definitely made up on the roundabouts, because they came out hotter. And you could see this morning, this morning for them, this evening for us, that they a little bit worried. You can see the US not really loving this inflationary environment, because we know, and one of the things that Trump said is it's going to be beautiful the way how he's going to attack inflation, and he's going to bring inflation under control. I still want to see how he does that with all these, you know, tariffs and tax cuts that he's planning, immigration laws he's planning to amend, how he's going to try and just get rid of all these the foreigners or illegal foreigners. I think it's going to be quite a challenge in terms of inflation. Then again, yes.
I hear you, Skulk, but I just, as you're saying this, I think of something in particular. I think of the powers that are bestowed upon a president. It's very easy for a president to say, we're going to do this, and then hire someone and make it that person's problem. And I suspect that might be what we're going to get come January of next year. We're going to get someone who's been tasked with implementing all of these crazy ideas at once, and none of the ideas are allowed to conflict, because that then it doesn't work out. And that's going to be a very interesting 2024. With that in mind, where do you see, or 2025 rather, with that in mind, where do you see the year kind of shaping up? I mean, we're seeing it now, it's ending potentially on rather uncertain ground. Going into next year, are you seeing dollar strength continue? Are you seeing some of the 2024 themes continue into next year? Or is it going to be a new year, new beginnings, new broom, and we're going to start over not knowing where we start?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, Donald Trump do not want dollar strength. That's one of the things he actually made blatantly clear. He wants to see the dollar a little bit weaker. And why? Because remember, if he's going to bring in all these wonderful tariffs that he's now talking about, you know, 100% tariffs for this country and 25% for my neighbor and 10% for this country, you know, we all get tariffs. The problem is if you get tariffs and you also get, you know, dollar strength, they will sort of, you know, just neutralize each other and won't have the effect that he really, really wants. So I think as it stands, I would still be leaning towards, I think we're going to be seeing dollar weakness in 2025. And naturally, you know, people say, well, if that's going to be the case, naturally, then we will see rand strength in South Africa, you know, compared to the dollar. Things like the gold suddenly comes into play again, because the gold price, we know, are highly sort of cyclical on the dollar price. As the dollar usually weaken, you do see that the dollar strengthen and vice versa. So I think that's going to be interesting one. You asked me the question, where do I see this play out? I think a lot's going to be focused on the 20th of January. And I don't think, you mentioned the new broom. I don't think the new broom will come in and just sweep everything in and out. And I do think there's going to be some, you know, trial and error. There's going to be a few things, most probably him saying, well, you know what? I know I said all these things in my election, process, and what I'm most probably going to do is we're going to put some timelines on it. We most probably won't be able to take the corporate taxes all the way down to 15%, as I alluded to. I will most probably not be able to scrap income taxes, as I alluded. But eventually, Rome wasn't built in a day. We will eventually get there, and I think as that happens, we might see some stabilizing around the, let's call it, inflation worries and those kind of things. If not, if it comes in all guns blazing, hey, that what I just said is off the table, and I do think we're going to sit with a very, very interesting year in terms of inflation.
Yeah, Skulk, you just made the incoming president of the United States sound very sane, and it's a worry. Just send shivers down my spine. I don't know if we're ready for that kind of environment. I think we'll have to wait until next year to find out, though. Skulk, before I let you go, I want to take a look at obviously the movements on the local bourse, finishing out in the red, very thin movements. We're thinning out towards the end of the year, but we are still seeing that resources down for the day, commodities pricing down for the day. that looks like it's going to kind of be the theme to wrap up the year, is we're not going to end on the high that we thought.
No, definitely. I think that's a big one. But also, it's going to bring some opportunities. I think usually what Warren Buffett always says, you don't want to be buying when there's blood in the streets. And blood in the streets, you know, when I think blood in the streets, I just think Sasol. I mean, man, Sasol yesterday, I just, when you think it can't go any lower, it just surprised you again and just go lower. Now, today, I'm so glad to mention that we've had a positive day in Sasol, actually close to 4%. I had to look twice, Jimmy. I really, really had to look twice and actually press the refresh button on my, just to make 100% sure. But I think to your question on resources, I'm carefully optimistic, you know, carefully bullish on resources. We've had China coming out today, or again saying that they are ready to do some stimulus again. We know that they mentioned that a month and a half ago, and I think it mix into that you can see that their retail figures are stabilizing. You can see the economy is not looking as bad as it did, let's call it, beginning of the year. I think China might be an interesting play, you know, for the next few months, and that should put a very, very interesting spin on some of these sort of distressed commodity companies. Remember, if you put in the CRB commodity index, now that's the commodity index with all commodity prices, most of the big ones, it's currently trading very, very close to an all-time high. So don't think because these commodity companies are trading at distressed levels that the commodity prices are actually as distressed. I think that's going to be an interesting one to look out for the 2025 trade.
May 2025 bring many opportunities for investors and for traders. We'll leave the conversation there. Skulk, thanks so much for the time and for the insights as always. Skulk Lowe, wealth manager at PSG Old Oak, joining me to take a look at some of the market movements and what's been happening around the world.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
And in keeping with one of the things that Skulk mentioned around the Barlow World offer that was put in today, we're going to be taking a look at some of the other deals that have been on the table and off the table and some of the other commitments that have been made. I'm joined on the line by the director at Deal Leaders International, Andrew Bowman, to take a look at some interesting deal activity that's been taking place. Good evening, Andrew. Lovely to catch up with you again. Let's start with that Barlow World announcement coming through. Saudi Arabian group, Zuhid Group, looking to acquire Barlow World and delist it. We had heard rumblings around this. I remember catching up with the Barlow World CEO. They wouldn't confirm or deny what was happening. They said there is a conversation that may or may not be happening. We finally have wind of it. 120 Rand a share. Is that a good deal?
Look, I think so. Clearly there was a lot happening behind closed doors. And I think if you see it, how the market reacted to the pricing and the bid, it was obviously very, very positive. I think there's, you know, one of the larger shareholders are questioning whether there shouldn't be a bit more premium in it. But again, one goes at market sentiment and reaction. And it looks like a good deal. You know, it looks like a solid, good partner. And I think clearly a lot of thought and planning has gone into the structure and the consortium that's doing it, you know, with the Zahid Group. So, yeah, I think it's very exciting and, you know, I think a huge, huge positive and another big, you know, FDI win for South Africa.
Speaking of FDI wins, let's stick with Saudi Arabia FDI wins. We'll come back to Bidvest in a second. We saw, or we may have seen it, depending on whether or not you read the president's letters to you as South African citizens. In the letter, it was kind of subtly hidden within there. There's a 9.5 billion rand planned investment from Saudi Arabia to build a refinery in the Limpopo province. Now, first of all, that's a weird place to put a refinery of all the provinces you could have chosen. But more than that, almost 10 billion rand and not a single word uttered by the media, by the government of national unity. What's going on here?
Yeah, it's a great point. You know, I'm actually going to read the letters with a lot more detail because if there's a few more 9.5 billions, I think it's a huge positive. Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, it just kind of pops out of the woodwork and you know, there's very little hype around it. So I agree with you. I think it is a strange location. I'm assuming that they've got their reasons, but yeah, a big number, clearly a big win for the production and processing of PGM and base metals. And yeah, you know, again, I guess it's going to be watch this space. But interesting enough, another Saudi Arabian play. So there's clearly this big push from a Middle Eastern, you know, investment perspective to be looking more and more in our, you know, our part of the world. You know, is a positive again. But yeah, interesting to see how it's going to play out.
I suppose from a Saudi Arabian point of view, when you have the amount of money that Saudi Arabia has and that the PIF has in Saudi Arabia, you kind of have to start to diversify beyond your own borders. In our case, we've been having the conversation around beneficiation of resources for the longest time, and it looks as though that's one of the big points around the seventh administration and wanting to push those objectives going forward. Does that bode well for other deals in the M&A or in the mining space in South Africa? We know South Africa's very big in terms of the mining plays. Does this kind of investment sentiment bode well for other miners?
Yeah, I would say absolutely. You know, I think the great thing with these types of investments is, one, it's a direct investment, you know, either in this type of you know, industrial play or in the direct assets themselves or in all the services around. So, yeah, you know, I think it often is there's the sentiment is boosted by the weight division of who's investing, you know, in specific industries. And I think, again, the Saudi play is probably maybe also triggered a bit by the BRICS element. And you're right, it is about that diversification. And we all know that there's a play on resources. And what I like is the confidence in PGM, because obviously PGM's gone through a little bit of a rocky year. But yeah, this is a vote of confidence, and hopefully that also boosts our export contributions from a GDP perspective back to Saudi.
Mm. Andrew, speaking of the PGM play, you and I caught up about that BHP Anglo deal just around the time it was happening. It didn't go through. Anglo's been trying to unbundle. They've done accelerated book builds on the Amplats business twice since then. Now BHP can come back to the table because the mandatory period in the UK has lapsed from a deal perspective and from an offer perspective. Do you see merit in that deal happening again, or in someone like BHP wanting to come back for it or for those Anglo assets? Or is it one of those things from a deal perspective, once it was off the table, it's unlikely to come back?
Look, I guess it depends on you know, the primary strategic driver and the egos around the table. I think there's, yeah, it's never easy to come back. You know, I just think on, you know, all of the, I'm going to say bad blood under the water, you know, under the, that's flowing in the water. But yeah, one hopes so, you know, either, you know, to whether it's them or somebody else. But there's always almost permanent cracks in the foundation when you go hard for a deal and it doesn't happen and it falls over. And then, you know, a lot has happened since then. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. Obviously, Anglo, you know, strategically both have got their drivers. So, you know, give it a little bit of time and let's see. But I would be quite doubtful if they do a deal, but very, very happy to be wrong.
Andrew, what about the Bidvest deal? The Bidvest disposal to Access Bank, the 2.8 billion rand of the business there. I mean, we've been keeping an eye on these sorts of movements as well throughout the year, so it's not really too much of a surprise, but happy that the deal finally went through. And this is not the first of this kind of deal. I think back to African Bank buying Grindrod's banking assets as well, and those sorts of things. What do you make of the Bidvest disposal? Well-timed?
I think so. You know, I think one, well-timed. You know, I think they found a really, really good acquirer. You know, I think the, you know, from an Access Bank perspective, I think they're a powerhouse, and it plays into their strategy as well. From Bidvest's perspective, obviously they're at an M&A level, they've been very aggressive, you know, in the current year. So clearly, you know, there's going to be 2.8 billion rands worth of relief, and if I recall, they're going to, you know, put that towards paying down some of that debt. So yeah, I think it plays well with them moving away from, you know, that banking, in inverted commas, non-core asset. Good deal, good buyer. Again, you know, I think reinforcing the financial framework, if you like, for, you know, that South Africa is still a strong gateway into Africa. And what I also like about it is, you know, it's going to factor in, you know, employee share structure and getting the right BEE credentials and everything in place. So, yeah, I think overall, you know, a very good outcome.
As I mention African Bank, I think back to, I think it was last week's announcement or the week before that, African Bank acquiring that, I think it was the home loan book from Eskom. Yes, that obviously, again, from an M&A point of view, clearly suggests that if you can find the right deal out there, there's going to be a lot to profit from it. There's going to be a lot of strategic advantages to that. Do you see these kinds of deals happening more going into 2025?
I think so. I think you've got to, you know, it becomes a lot more clinical almost. And I think, you know, it was a great play. You know, it was quite interesting to see the scale of that book. And, you know, African banks had a great turnaround, you know, strategy, and that they're clearly going after those types of opportunities. So, yeah, I think there's going to be a lot more almost looking under the hood and being more targeted, because I think there are going to be a lot of good assets kind of lumped together in either SOEs or these large groups who are diversifying away from non-core assets and the likes. So I think clever players in the M&A space are going to see some really good targets, I think fair pricing and really good synergies that they can hopefully tap into relatively easily.
Andrew, would you say that these companies need to have strong balance sheets to take advantage of these? Or if you have kind of good leverage on the book and you're able to just strategically structure a deal with good management, then you might not necessarily need to have the cash on hand?
Yeah, look. I think it's always a blend. You know, I think at the end of the day, it depends on the assets. So, can you leverage the assets? Because clearly, it's going to be better for your return on capital, and what that structure is going to look like. So, yeah, I think it always helps to have some dry powder that isn't debt. But I think more and more, the reality is there's a lot of debt out there, and there's a lot of, you know, aggressive lending to the right structures and the right management team. So, I think one has to be creative. And I think, to be quite honest, a lot of these, particularly these bigger deals, you know, very seldom will it be a pure equity play. So, yeah, look, a strong balance sheet always helps. An over-geared balance sheet is always quite risky from a counterpart perspective. And so, yeah, I think to support what you're saying, Jim, is a stronger balance sheet gives you a lot more leverage and flexibility in structuring deals.
It's certainly going to be an interesting 2025 when we look at the deal space, and I'm sure you and I, Andrew, are going to be having a lot more of these conversations. Hopefully some of them are surprises in a positive light, but we'll leave the conversation there for now. Thanks so much, Andrew, for the time and for the insights. Andrew Ballman, Director at Deal Leaders International, on some of the M&A activity that's taken place throughout the year and what we could potentially be in for in the new year.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
And we're going to take a look at the financial sector. Now we're going to take a look at the performance of the financial sector over the 2024 year and possibly even over the 2025 year, if we can see what we might be in for. I'm joined on the line by Director at Denker Capital, Kokkie Kooyman, to take a look at some of the movements and the performances throughout the year. Good evening, Kokkie. Lovely to catch up with you as always. It's been a very interesting year for financial sector stocks. It's been a lot of movements largely driven by things like interest rate expectations and forecasts and inflation and all of that. What do you make of just the performance of the financial sector over this year?
Yeah, no, it was expected, and sometimes we get things right. And it's one thing we did warn clients of at the end of last year in December and before that. The background was that inflation globally had peaked and was starting to come down. And you could see that interest rates had obviously were at a high level and would then follow down. We were too early in forecasting, although we don't really try and make money, so to speak, from the cycle. But you knew the background was that interest rates would fall. And falling interest rates or lowering interest rates is normally good for the financial sector. What is interesting in South Africa, though, is if you look at the performers, then I am surprised. fortunately, we do hold both, but I didn't have them on the list of top buyers. The two best performers were OUTsurance and Capitec. And Capitec was up 67% year to date. That includes dividends. and our insurance up 69% year to date. And two phenomenal companies with really exceptional management in terms of the way they do things and the way they've shaped their businesses and their growth potential. But at the beginning of the year, Capitec, by all means, was expensive. It was a price to net asset value of 5.56 versus, let's say, APSA one time. So it was five times more expensive than APSA. But yet it's re-rated to where it's now 7.28. I think it's one of the most expensive banks in the world on a price to NAV basis. Now, obviously, the market is clever. Well, we'll see that in the future. But the market is looking forward to, you know, what they can still do and the value of the franchise. But then Nedbank and Absa also did very well. Nedbank 44% for the year, including the dividend, and Absa 32%. Both were actually trading just at book value beginning of the year. Nedbank re-rated quite a bit. It's now 1.4. Absa still actually fairly cheap. So, and on the insurers, we actually had Momentum, which is also a share we like very much. Well, sorry, we like the company, obviously. We like the management, especially Jeanette Marais, who's come in, building on the platform that she and Hilly and Risto spent 3 years on re-establishing the business. But 49% gain for Metropolitan, also coming from a 1.1 times price to book. So the financial sector at the beginning of the year, if you look back, was cheap. Most of the shares, the index, the interest rate cycle was going to, if it, indeed interest rates came down, actually it would benefit it. And then obviously the big event this year for South Africa was the election and the GNU being formed, which gave investors the confidence to buy. I think if we didn't have a GNU or a GNU with you know, let's say the Communist Party, or which is not a market cap a friendly party, even if interest rates had come down, you wouldn't have had the same effect. So it was the combination of those factors. And then just a few others that one mustn't ignore. Quilter, you know, the smaller the asset managers, Quilter, Coronation, and even the JSE, the share, did very well. PSG Financial Services, and then all the property companies. Not all, but a lot of them. Wilson, Bailey, Hyprop, Attack, Fairvest, all did sort of 50%. So you can see the interest rates played a big role in revaluing financial services stocks and banks and insurers.
Kokki, in almost all of these examples that you've listed now, it's double-digit growth in terms of year-to-date performances. Is that a sign that the South African market may have been under more pressure than other markets leading up to 2024? And is it a sign that we could potentially have strong momentum going into 2025, understanding, of course, that all the elections are now behind us. We've got new governments in place. We've got a return of certain presidents like President Donald Trump in the US's case. Is this a sign that we might have momentum to do this again next year? Or does the steam kind of start to run out?
Yeah, I would say what we've seen now is maybe not steamy, but it was good. It was actually Capitec and Altruance and some of the other 60% is. So interesting that we had the same phenomenon globally. The US bank sector was on average, the index up 44%. Mm. So you can see the same happened. The European banks were also up about 60%. So globally, banks reacted to lower interest rates. So I think question one in terms of 25 is, do we see a continuation of that? And it seems that way, specifically in South Africa. Our inflation rate's coming down nicely. It has come down a lot. And, you know, there's a lot of talk of our Reserve Bank lowering interest rates by maybe even three cuts next year. US depends on President Trump, whose policies are seen by some to potentially be inflationary. So are they going to see further cuts? Maybe one will actually next week, I think. But, you know, thereafter it might be on hold. So as a backdrop, I would think your financial sector will still outperform and do well. And in Europe specifically, but South Africa, we've done well, still cheap. Absa still on a price to book of one, even Momentum 1.2, and they're generating returns on capital of 16, 18%, dividend yield still of Absa still on 7% dividend yield. So I think as interest rates come down, if they do, then the sector should have another good year.
Kwaki, when we look at the performance of the financial sector and the performance of South Africa in particular, do you think this performance would have been affected or would have been any different had we not been grey-listed as a country at this point? Do you think that investor sentiment around the financial sector might have been different if we were in a different position?
Yeah, Jimmy, it's a good question. Remember, at the beginning, you actually summed it up quite nicely in saying there were so many events and the mood was, at the beginning of the year, so negative. Yet, if you look at the full year, the rand has actually appreciated by 3% from 1 January this year against the dollar and by more than 7% against the euro. So my opinion is the grey listing had an effect, but not that much. It has an effect of increasing the cost of finance, so inhibiting growth. But I think the GNU was the two factors, GNU being formed and lower interest rates, I think were the two major drivers. The grey listing, if it does get reversed next year, then I think it will be a contributing factor to further positiveness about the country. But I think the other events were too big to really affect it. Interesting, if you look at these percentage gains I forgot to add, the JSE was only up 18%. Mm. So, then a Capitec 66 or APSA 32, Nedbank 44 compared to the JSE's, 18, that's good.
Yeah, so for certainly financial sector stocks outperforming some of their peers. I mean, I think of the likes of resource counters that we've had conversations around, some of the resource counters down 50% as opposed to up 67%. Kwaki, going into 2025, I'd imagine we are hopeful that we get more of the same in terms of more consistency from the decision-making parties or the decision-makers around the world. But are you optimistic about the financial sector space?
Yeah. Now, I think what investors generally missed in 23 in the run-up to this, and still to a certain extent, is all the work that regulators have been doing post-2008. They've really tried to make the financial sector bomb-proof almost, and it's been to the detriment of their returns, but really forcing them to hold excess capital, excess reserves, to clean up their lending books. So the financial sector is actually very clean, and so you won't get the normal, bad debts coming through. And plus, as interest rates come down, it actually enhances demand for credit. So your demand for credit comes through. You lose a bit on interest margin, but your transaction volumes pick up. So I would still say we certainly will have good earnings growth, whether like Capitec and OUTsurance and FirstRand re-rate more. But even they should do a 15%. I'll forget to mention that the underperforming share or two shares this year were Investec. It's still trading at 20% discount to book value. It's a great company, but it was affected by the UK. Elections didn't come across that well. The growth rate in the UK is poor, and they had the whole vehicle leasing thing going against all the banks. And similarly, Old Mutual gained only 8% year to date, and that's also so awesomely cheap, but not the greatest management and board. So there are a lot of pockets of value in the financial sector, and I would say 70% of them are still mispriced and could re-rate.
Mm. A good year for 2024 for financial stocks in 2024, and hopefully a better year in 2025. I think we'll leave the conversation there, Kwaki. Thanks as always for the time and for the contributions. Kwaki Kooyman, director at Denker Capital, sharing his thoughts around the financial sector performance for the year that was 2024.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This feature is brought to you by the Standard Bank Group. So the 2024 Sports Industry Awards were recently held, and at the awards, Standard Bank took top honours as the brand or sponsor of the year. I'm joined on the line by Itumeleng Matlaila, who is the head of marketing mass middle youth at the Standard Bank Group, rather, to take a look at this and see what this all means for the business. Good evening, Itumeleng. Thanks so much for taking the time. Obviously, to win any award in any space is a good thing for a business, but to particularly win an award that speaks to your sponsorship strategy over the year and your long-term commitment towards sponsoring education and sports, that's something special.
Absolutely. Firstly, we are absolutely thrilled about this recognition and thank our partner schools and everyone that has contributed to the growth of the sponsorship property over the years. We believe what has set us apart, Jimmy, is our long-term commitment and overall impact that the sponsorship has had. You know, the scale is huge. This year alone, we've participated in 17 festivals across 9 sporting codes, over 11,000 players, and many, many, many more spectators. Boys' schools, girls' schools, co-ed schools. So we're quite excited to have been honored in this way.
Itumeleng, over the last couple of years, probably over the last 10 years, I'm guessing, Standard Bank has been very involved in these programs and contributing every single year to grow the programs. Do you think that from your contributions and how you're seeing the space and how you're seeing all of the results of your 10 years or more of hard work, do you think that the programs that you've been a part of have really made an impactful difference when it comes to aligning what you guys have as a vision for why you're involved, but also the communities that you're involved with?
Absolutely. We believe there's been great impact. You know, interwoven in a brand narrative is growth. And in the words of our private and personal banking chief executive, Mrs. Funeka Munjani, the fortunes of our continent are tied to the prosperity of our young people. So as the largest bank on the continent in terms of assets, we recognize our responsibility in terms of nurturing young people's growth through education, of course, sports, you know, the arts, financial education, and we also offer many, many relevant solutions through student loans and many other things. So our commitment to youth development goes way, way, way beyond the sporting field because growth is in our DNA as a brand. We say Africa is our home. We drive a growth at Standard Bank.
Something interesting about what you said, Itumeleng, is around the financial education. More often than not, when we think about the sporting space, there is always that disconnect or that missing gap where we feel that the sports activities are covered, or the development is covered there, but there's a very big gap in terms of financial literacy, and that plays such an instrumental role in the development of athletes, in the post kind of athletic life of athletes. We know that that's a finite time, and in that time, yes, they might make a lot more money, or they might achieve a lot more in that time, but financial literacy is crucial to athletes being able to maintain their lives beyond the sport.
Absolutely. I mean, we see schools as hubs for families and the community at large. These athletes belong in families, you know, and obviously as personal and banking, personal and private banking business unit, we believe in family banking. And by family banking, we mean we partner with our clients, we partner with their children, because we know our clients want to build a legacy and ensure that one generation lives better than the last. But talking to financial education and financial literacy specifically, we find these festivals as a great opportunity to start introducing financial literacy in a fun way. We call it edutainment, you know, so we find innovative ways to get them engaged from a very, very young age. I've seen some parents with toddlers interacting in our fun quizzes and other financial literacy material. But of course, beyond the festival, we've got way, way other products and programs that our young people, as well as their parents, can get involved in.
Itumeleng, tell me about some of the other programs, because in as much as you can contribute from a sporting side, you can contribute from a financial literacy and an education point of view, the aim of these contributions and these initiatives is to build as rounded a community and as rounded as a sports individual as you can in whatever way you guys help. And I'm sure some of the programs extend beyond just saying, hey, here's some money, we're going to sponsor your sporting or whatever. It goes far beyond that to say we want to help you nurture and grow as an individual.
Absolutely. So within Standard Bank, we have a division that's called money management, and their entire role, 24/7, is to put together various tailored money management programs to help our clients and community at large. One such program that I can mention is our WalletWise program that has also been running for many, many years. In fact, we've been honored with 4 ASSAGAI awards a few weeks ago because of its incredible nature of being able to engage with communities. So this is way beyond the classroom. We do have that, but we also go into communities. And when it comes to schools, we also, you know, beyond all the games and activities that we have on the day, we try and negotiate with the schools to go back during down season to be able to, you know, teach as much as we can about financial literacy.
Itumeleng, before I let you go, I want to take a look at the role that Standard Bank sees itself playing going forward. I mean, obviously, the youth side of your programs is a big focal point for you because you want to see those programs last longer. It's not just about saying, hey, we're going to be here for 2 minutes and then we're on to the next kind of program. It's saying we want to take this journey with you, but support you along the various steps in your life. There's obviously different decisions you take at various points in your life. Standard Bank wants to be there for that entire journey.
Absolutely, absolutely. And if we think of particularly with the schools, I mean, what we really recognize is our young people, they've got great ambition, right? They want to study. They want to study even abroad in some instances. And one of the things that we pride ourselves in is our student loan program that we have. It's the only one of its kind in our country that pays for abroad studies, international studies. It pays for any profession as long as at a registered higher learning institution. So we ensure that every step of the way, we partner with our clients, their children, their community at large. I mean, Jimmy, if I think of you in your household or many other South Africans, you have perhaps this grandparents that you're responsible for. Maybe there's a gardener, maybe there's a domestic worker beyond, you know, the children. So we look at our clients' lives holistically to say, that domestic worker, how can we help you, Jeannie, as our client, to make sure that their child also goes to school? You know, so I think if you and I talk about all the offerings and solutions we have, we'll be on the call the whole evening.
We certainly will. Itumeleng, you touched on the education abroad aspect, and that's quite an important thing, especially when we talk about youth, because we've seen what the stats say from Stats SA. We've seen what youth unemployment rates look like. We've seen what job opportunities or the lack thereof does towards the South African youth. From a Standard Bank perspective, how are your initiatives kind of aimed at impacting that and trying to reduce that? I know it takes a lot to make a significant dent there, but every job that you guys are able to create or contribute towards is a job that might not have existed before you guys got involved.
Absolutely. We see the youth unemployment situation in a country as a complex, multi-layered situation. It concerns us, and we certainly see that we have to also play our part. Being Standard Bank Group, obviously, we've got a myriad of divisions. It's not just the personal and private banking. We also have a business commercial banking division that has massive programs to help with youth entrepreneurship, you know, because we recognize that in a continent like ours, we have to develop young entrepreneurs. So beyond what we're doing on the sporting field with our arts programs, with our student loans and many other solutions, we also work with young people in terms of developing the entrepreneurial flair.
Making a positive contribution towards the youth of South Africa. That's what Standard Bank aims to do, and that's what they will continue to do. Once again, congratulations on being awarded the brand or slash sponsor of the year at the most recent Sports Industry Awards. I think we'll leave the conversation on that positive note. Thank you so much, Itumeleng, for the time and for the insights. Itumeleng Matlela, who is Executive Head for Brand and Marketing at the Standard Bank Group. This feature was brought to you by the Standard Bank Group.
When you're growing your money, you need to make the right choices. That's why at Standard Bank Private, we offer the best of everything. Our offshore investments are award-winning. We'll give you the best forex rates around. As SA's biggest home loan provider, we offer unmatched expertise, and you'll have access to the best financial planners and bankers. So why not visit standardbank.co.za to join Africa's best private bank today? Standard Bank is an authorized FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
It's our final SME of the week for the year, and what better way to wrap things up than by speaking to the FNB App of the Year winners. We're going to be taking a look at the business that is called Matric Live. I'm joined on the line by the co-founder and CEO of that business, Kagiso Masai, to take a look at his business and get a sense of what it is that they do. Kagiso, good evening. Thanks so much for taking the time. First and foremost, congratulations are in order. I can imagine it is not an easy thing to be the best app in the entire country for the year 2024.
Well, first things first, thank you for having us. You know, we truly appreciate it and we are humbled. And yeah, it goes without saying, I think it's still sinking in and it hasn't sunk in. We've been through a lot as a small team, and to be rendered the App of the Year award is something that we've always aspired to have, but we didn't anticipate. So yeah, we are grateful and humbled at the same time.
Kagiso, tell us about the App of the Year. What is it that Matric Live does?
Perfect. So Matric Live effectively is a combination of frustrations of two township boys who are 11 years apart about their high school experience, right? The first things first, we took the grade 10 to 12 high school curriculum only for public schools for now, which is CAPS, and we turned it into three core stages, which is on a mobile application, learners get to learn, play and test themselves. On the learning piece, they engage with learning content in micro bits, and they also do have access to videos that have been taken by professional teachers through partnerships we have, and they can test themselves there. On the playing piece, which is obviously my favorite part, we have a built-in e-game where when learners have each other's numbers and they both have the app, they can challenge each other to best of five quizzes. The winner earns 5 points, the loser loses 5 points to the winner. Very competitive. They spend a lot of time there. And the final leg is the exam piece, where we took 6 years worth of past papers. We turned it into an over 10,000 previously asked exam question bank. So learners get to engage with an exam simulator that actually simulates how questions would be asked in a live exam. And it's all run on a mobile application on their phone. So we found them where they are.
Kagiso, what made you think of including gamification into an app that's essentially a learning app more than anything else?
Reality is we learn by play.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think that's the one thing that's often taken for granted. It does help that both my co-founder and I, we love gaming. I was an avid gamer growing up, and I remember my parents always used to make me turn off the TV to say that I'm either going to burn the plugs or whenever there's lightning, but I just loved gaming. The same goes for my co-founder. So that's the one piece. The selfish side was that we just loved gaming. But then at the same time is that if you realize we used to compete all the time, best of five quizzes, times tables, and also kids are quite competitive amongst each other. So instead of making learning look like a foe, you need to make it fun. I am of the belief that learning should be fun and social. It shouldn't feel like something that's a chore. And that's why we figured gaming is a critical component of it. You need to understand that learning can be fun. And that's the big aim.
Yeah, no one wants to do things that are boring. I mean, we all want to have a bit of fun along the way. So I guess it does make kind of a lot of sense why you went that route. So Kagiso, when the business was coming together and you were putting this app together, you mentioned, of course, that you worked with a couple of different stakeholders and various contributors that helped put this whole thing together. What were some of the challenges that you found in building this business?
The funny part is the business was never what we envisaged it to be now, right? And both Lesego and I started on separate journeys just trying to solve problems. For example, I'm from a township in the Northwest, and I was fortunate enough to get a scholarship to a private school at 12, turning 13. And as much as I enjoyed it, the first thing that hit me was the disservice. I was surprised at the level and the caliber of facilities that we had at that school that I didn't have growing up. So it's something that has always stuck with me. And the big part to me was eventually when I work, because I did end up in corporate for 13 years, I always wanted to create a platform that would make learning social and easy so that other kids from regions like myself could have a better relationship with education. So I designed a product where like-minded nerds in the township could have access to each other but I worked in banking and I was not a developer. So I mapped out a user journey. I put it on Fiverr and I got a developer in India to build my first product. However, 2 years down the line, I met my now co-founder, Lesego, and he had a different experience. At 15 years old, his mom got him a laptop because he was a naughty child. He went on YouTube, learned how to build games. And when he finished Matric, he just said, what if I created a platform that I wish I had when I was in Matric? So he created something. And by chance, we met in 2019, beginning of 2020, on LinkedIn, ironically enough. We had lunch where I used to work, and we actually saw that the perfect user journey is us coming together. So we did it, and it all started out of solving a problem. We were first trying to solve a problem rather than trying to build businesses, and that's the part. We've now grown into a business because we went viral, and then stakeholders started coming to us.
So, Kagiso, what's next for the business?
Ah, look, we have big aspirations. Number one, as much as we had a lot of users this year, we are still mindful that there's a bigger pool of learners, right? And I've mentioned both our backgrounds. We would like to see Matric Live in almost every hand of kids in the quintile 1-3 schools. So the first things first is to actually accelerate our reach in those regions where people do not have access to such facilities, because it's those kids that don't have textbooks that are in overcrowded classes that actually need this the most. That's the one part. Number two, we started creating more tech, which is now more school and teacher focused. It's already been in beta. It's been bought by one school, and we plan to now officially launch it next year and expand it to the schooling market in South Africa. Thirdly, on the bigger scheme of things, we are not just thinking in South Africa. You know, Sub-Saharan Africa on its own, as we speak, has over 108 million kids who are not in school but should be in school. We are gambling with a humanitarian crisis, so we would love to venture into other parts of Africa, Sub-Saharan Africa specifically, starting with maybe the surrounding markets. So the dreams are big, and it's not just about business. It's about solving, you know, a pending humanitarian crisis for the youngest continent in the world, that being where we call home.
Kagiso, how do people get hold of the app? How do people get in touch with you if people want to make use of the app, if partners want to get hold of you? Give us some of the details around that.
Definitely. So first of all, the app itself, Matric Live, is available across iOS, Huawei App Gallery, and Android. My first name, Kagiso, K-A-G-I-S-H-O. You know, if you just search that on, like, so that's my first name. And then at saadc.co.za, that's my email address. Alternatively, if you do even reach out on socials, our Matric Live social handles have a team that's managing it. And if ever you want to connect with me, you can always go there and then advise them, and then they will get in touch with me. But we, because we are still small and we are agile, we are open. We are looking to work with people. So search Matric Live on Google. Search Kagiso Masayo on LinkedIn. Reach me through my inbox. Or you can just email me on the email address I gave. But we are very open. And the app is across all the app stores, like I mentioned.
A business born from necessity and fueled by collaboration. No wonder you guys won App of the Year. We wish you all of the best of luck with your future endeavors, and we look forward to seeing the business all across and the app all across the African continent. We'll leave the conversation there, Kagiso. Thanks so much for the time and for the insights. Kagiso Masai, who is the co-founder and CEO of Matric Live, joining us for this week's SME. It's coming up to 7 o'clock, which means Greg Host is standing by to give you the latest round of evening news, followed by the top sport team. From my side, good night.